Wednesday, the 8th of September, Koftes Elul, Erev Rosh Hashanah, Rabbi Joseph Perlman, Rosh Hashanah.
Okay. Hashanah Tov to everybody. First, let me thank the organisers for inviting me to speak again. It's nice to be back. This is actually the fourth time I've spoken on the Inyonim of Rosh Hashanah, and I was very pleased to hear that one gentleman remembered something of what was said on a previous occasion a couple of years ago about the simonim of Rosh Hashanah. We've also dealt with the tefillahs of Rosh Hashanah, so I thought we'd take a new topic this year. The topic's not new, but it's new for me, and that is the Rosh Hashanah and the relationship to the shofar. Now, we all know that we start blowing the shofar on Rosh Chodesh Elul. The main reason given for that is that Moshe Rabbeinu went up to get the luchos shnias. The first luchos got smashed, and unpleasant things happened. The second 40 days Moshe was busy pleading for mechila, but the third 40 days he went up with completely barotzon. He started on Rosh Chodesh Elul, and he got the luchos on Yom Kippur. So we are hoping that we'll start also on Rosh Chodesh Elul with Tshuva, and by the time it comes to Yom Kippur, we should have Kodesh Baruch Hu's complete blessing. And we blow the shofar every day, this is a minhag, until this morning, all of a sudden, we leave it out. Now, I didn't get left out this morning because the person forgot about it, or it was too late, we're too busy doing other things. That's not the reason we didn't blow it this morning. There's two major reasons given for today. One is, so you've got to be mechalek or havdil ben tikkias to reshus, the tikkias to chovah. You should realize that the tikkias which we're blowing up to now are just a minhag, and we don't want to mix the minhag with the mitzvah d'oraisa. The mitzvah d'oraisa will start tomorrow, and therefore we have to have a hesek. But the second reason is in order to be ma'arbeiv es hasotn. The sotn thinks that we have given up blowing the shofar, we've finished our tshuva, etc., and therefore the sotn will leave us alone. Sorry?
You just told him now.
Yes, he's quite right. We've given him the information, and quite apart from that, he's been here for 5,700 years. We did discuss this in connection with the simonim of Rosh Hashanah, those of you who might remember. We do all sorts of peculiar things in order to confuse the sultan. The whole of the shofar is supposed to frighten the sultan. Now, you know, you can be frightened once or twice, but after 5,700, I don't know how many years, by that time the sultan should be used to it. What's he getting so frightened about? And then before we blow the shofar tomorrow, we'll have six psukim which will say kra shofar, because the kra sultan, I'm getting mixed up myself, kra sultan, the six verses will commence with the letters of kra sultan to show us that we're trying to be ma'arabev as a sultan. We'll come back to that in a second. Now, just to keep you all on your toes, I'm going to ask an interesting question which hopefully we'll get the answer by the end of this year. That's this: can you conceive of the longest possible Shmoin Esra that you could possibly ever say? Think about it. Which is the longest possible Shmoina Esther that you could ever manage to say? Now, you might say, what's that got to do with what I'm talking about? Well, if you can work that one out, that's also a good thing. But in the meantime, I'm going to go on, and we'll come back to that later. Now, the point of Arbeit as a Sotn, as we did discuss before, is not so much that there's a Malach of HaKadosh Baruch Hu who is going to be confused and defeated, or that's the way language is presented. The Sotn is clearly with each person's Yetzirah, with inside us. And that is not the same as it was that year. That Sotn changes every year. Every year we have different problems and different cheshbonos. The Sotn will renew itself, and each one of us will have our own Yetzirah, which will be different from everybody else's. And the point of the Kra Sotn is to try the whole time to get our Yetzirah put out, to straighten it up. And if all of a sudden we stop blowing the shofar the day before Rosh Hashanah, that's going to make us think, now why are we doing that? And similarly, when we blow the shofar, we're supposed to think of all the secrets that the shofar has got, and that is supposed to remove our wish to do evil, our wish to befollow the Satan, so to speak. In this sense, the Satan meaning our own Yetzer Hara. And the shofar is very much attuned to that. This will help, as we're going to see, the Ramazim afterwards. Now, the mitzvah is not so much to blow. There's a machlokus between the mafoshim as to whether the mitzvah is the blowing or the listening. But quite clearly, we make the bracha, the halacha, we make the bracha lishmoa kol shofar. We don't say lishmoa b'kol shofar, because that would mean to listen to what the shofar is telling us. We don't say lishmoa l'kol shofar, but that also means to do something which the shofar is giving us the orders. What we just simply say is lishmoa kol shofar, to listen to the noise which the shofar makes. And that's what we have to do. We have to listen to the tekiah, the shvarim, the trua, the shvarim trua, the tekiahs. We listen, and then we take the message from that. Now, how do we know that this is what's required? If you look in the Torah, nowhere does it say you've got to blow the shofar on Rosh Hashanah. Nowhere in the Torah explicitly. In fact, we know we've got various names for Rosh Hashanah. It's called Rosh Hashanah, it's called Yom HaDin, it's called Yom Haras Olam. But in the Torah, none of those names occur. There's only one name given to Rosh Hashanah in the Torah, and that is Yom Trua, or Yom Zichron Trua. That's what the whole of Rosh Hashanah is about. It's about the Trua and the Zichron Trua according to the actual Psukim. Now, how therefore do we know that we've got to blow with a shofar? Maybe you could blow with a trumpet. Maybe you could just blow with your mouth. Because all you've got to do is make a Trua. So where do you learn that you've got to have a shofar from? And apart from that, how do you know you've got to have a tekiah? Shavarim Tekiah, Tekiah Trua Tekiah. How do we know all this? How do you know you've got to do it three times? Yom Trua, you blow a couple of times. Why does it have to be Davka that? Well, the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, towards the end of Rosh Hashanah, the well-known Gemara says, we learn it out from a Gezerah Shavu. In fact, the whole thing is really learned not from where Rosh Hashanah is mentioned, but from where Yovel is mentioned. Now, the three psukim which are relevant, to set out here in the front of you, you've got the posuk, first posuk in Emor, which talks about a zichron trua. Rosh Hashanah is Yerlechem Shabbosain Zichron Trua. Rosh Hashanah's got the din of the Shabbosain. It's not a Shabbos, as Yanki was saying, telling you before about the Shabbos is a higher Kedushah of Yom Tov. But Shabbos is a Shabbos Shabbosain, it's a double meaning. That's why Yom Kippur is a Shabbos Shabbosain. Therefore, you've got much more chumras on Yom Kippur, similar to Shabbos. The only difference is that the Shabbos, you have a Mrs. Best, Miss Skiller, and Yom Kippur, you have a chorus. But Shabbos and Yom Kippur go together. However, the other Yom Tovim, you can carry, you can go Chum Nefesh. So, therefore, they are it's a lesser degree, but it's still called a Shabbosan. We know that when we make when the post says Bocharas HaShabbos, which the Tzedokim says got to always be a Sunday, we know it's not so. We know that the Bocharas HaShabbos means the day after the Yom Tov of Pesach, because Pesach is also a Yom Tov. So when the post says Shabbosan once, that includes Yom Tov. So in Emor it's called Shabbosan Zichron Trua. Then in Parshas Pinchas, the Pasuk doesn't say Zichron Trua, it says Yom Trua Yalachem. So we've got two psukim, each one of them is referring to the Trua, which we take as meaning blowing. There's a lot of remes in the word Trua. It includes, for example, to break oneself, it's a lesson of Ru'ua, like coastal Ru'ua, or a weak or a broken wall. It also brings in Re'ah, we've got to be friendly with each other, it brings in Re'os. There's all sorts of remozim in the word itself. But basically, we know that the Trua can mean joy, of happiness, but in the basic meaning of the word Trua here is the noise which we make from the da-da-da sound of the Trua. So it's called, in Emma it's called Zichron Trua, and in Pinchas it's called Trua. But nowhere does it say shofar yet. We don't know what you're supposed to do. Then, in Parashas Bahar, however, when it's talking about Yovel, and we know that Yom Kippur of Yovel is a special day, there the Pasuk says, V'havarto shofar Trua, on Yom Kippur, and then it goes on to say Taviru Shofar. So the shofar is mentioned clearly in connection with Yom Kippur. So Chazal learn a gezeirah shofar between the truah of Emor and Pinchas, and they tie it up with Bahar. It's gezeirah shofar is like it's a midyaraisah, of course. It's not the foolish bekro, but it's from the shlosh asur midas, and therefore it has a din of a diraisah. And therefore we say, since we have the truah in all three places, that teaches us we've got to do it three times. So on Rosh Hashanah we have to do three, and on Yom Kippur of Yovel we also have to do three. But three of what? Three truas. Says the Gemara, no, not just a trua. The fact that it says ha'avora beforehand and ha'avora afterwards, that the ha'avim is to pass the note. The ha'avora represents the tekiyah, the note which will the long note which will continue, and the trua is mentioned mefurish. So we have a tekiyah at the beginning and a tekiyah at the end, because that's what the pasuk says in Bahar, and we import that into Rosh Hashanah as well through the gezeirah shofar. So we know you've got to blow three times, because it says three places, and we know you've got to start with the tekiyah before and the tekiyah afterwards, and in the middle we have the truah. Now, how do we end up with the shvarim? It's the apostle says truah, it doesn't say shvarim. Well, that's well known. There's a shaila whether it's a machlokus as to what a truah is, or is it in fact at all? Any note can be considered as a truah, but there were different minhagim. That's the machlokus we're showing them as to how it all was. We're not going into that at the moment. But very briefly, it's clear that a truah is a broken note. And it's well known that the Chayodim points out that when you cry, you can either cry, oi, 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 that's the shavarim, which is a truah. Or you can do the two together. But that's the shvarim teruah. But nobody goes, oi, oi. That you don't do. Now, you might do it, but in fact, the mindset is that it's not done according to the halacha. That's not the way to cry. And therefore, nobody suggests it could be truah in shvarim. So, since we've got these three possibilities, we have now either a sofik, which it is, in which case we have to do all three, or we have different minhagim, and now there's manazer, we've incorporated all the minhagim, as we often do. You know how many svardim minhagim we Ashkenazim have got today, and how many Ashkenazim minhagim the svardim have got. They just sort of take all the minhagim from everywhere. So throughout the doiras, what's happened is all the different minhagim as to how to blow all being involved. In fact, there's another question. When you do a shvarim teruah, is it supposed to be all one groan? I won't do the groan again, you're probably fed up with hearing it. But, or is it in fact two separate groans, and you have a little break in between, and there's also another machlokus. So in order to be yotze both days, a good Baal Tekiyah will, on the first set of tekiyahs, will do it one way, and on the second tekiyahs he'll do it separate. Normally the first tekiyahs you do shvarim teruah together, and if you listen to the good makre, you'll find the first time he calls out shvarim teruah. But when you go through the second set in Shemayin Esra, he doesn't go Shvarim Teruah, he goes Shvarim Teruah. Now listen to the Makre, a good Makre, one who knows what he's doing, most of the Rabbanim do, therefore you would notice how he says it. Sometimes he tells the Baal Tekiyah, I'm going to do it this way to remind you, this is how you should do it. But the point being that since there's different minhagim, or different as machlokes as to how to do it, we want to be yotze all the days. So what happens is in the first one we do it shvarim teruah, and the second one shvarim, and a little breath, not too long, a little breath, and a teruah. There's also a shaila whether the truah has got to be nine notes or three notes. All this is discussed in halacha, but it's also a lot of remez involved in it as well. So now, what we've decided is there's got to be three sets. The question is, all right, the Torah gives us three different sets. What was the kavona? What was the necessity for it? And the answer is very simply that Malchus, Zichronus, and Shofros. On Yom Kippur, on Rosh Hashanah, we have the tefillah is built, the whole Seder HaTefillah is built on these three different items, the Malchus, Zichronus, and Shofros, which in turn are meant to represent also the three ikrim of Rabbi Yosef Albo, of the three ikrim of the whole world is dependent. Malchus, Zichronus, and Shofros represents these three items, as you know, Matzias Hashem, Schav Einish, and Termin HaShemayim. All that is linked, and it's also linked to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. All the Mephoreshim link them up. But as far as we're concerned, the three items, a Malchus, Zichron, and Shofas, can actually be easily linked to the Psukim where they occur. And I've mentioned it very quickly. The one in Bahar represents Malchus. We'll come back to that again when we talk about the answer to our question of the longest bracha. I think, hope you've been working it out. That talks about Malchus. Does it? No, I beg your pardon, longest from Lesser. It's very tired having got up so early. No, you're on the wrong lines. Right, okay. Now, next one. But the second one in Pinchas talks about Zichron. It's not the one in Emor, which is Zichron, sure, which you might have thought. It's not so. The one which deals with Zichron is that in Pinchas. And one of the explanations is that in Pinchas it says Lochem twice. So the Pasuk says Yom Troyeh Lochem, but it's already previously in the Pasuk said Lochem. So Lochem means for each individual person, for all of Klal Yisrael. And that's where the Zichron is fit in. And finally, the Zichron Trua in Emor actually refers to the Shofros. Because that Zichron, the Zichron Trua, we refer to that, refers to all the occasions when the Shofar was blown. And therefore, although it says Zichron, you might have thought it was Zichronus, in fact, it's more appropriate to Shofros. We haven't really got time to go into the detail, but if you take that and work on it, you'll see it all fits. Now, we're saying, therefore, that the three Psukim represent the three Inyanim. But this a side problem is this. We also know that the word Zichron Trua, according to the Havamina of the Bavli and the Maskana of the Yerushalmi, teaches us that on Shabbos you don't blow. We don't blow on Shabbos because of the Yerushalmi, Avir, and Dalad Amos. It's a separate Gezerah, Midrabonah. And the Pasuk is Machta Ba'alma. But according to the Havamina of the Gemara and according to the Yerushalmi, Zichron Trua tells us about that when you don't blow. It's only Zichron for the Trua. We learn Pshat, Zichron Trua, as meaning something different. We learn Zichron being, like we said just now, referring to all the shofars at times when it was blown, etc. But nonetheless, the Rishani learns, and the Havman in the Bavli, that Zichron Trua means you don't blow it on Shabbos. So the question is, why was that in Emor? Emor is the first thing. First you tell blow, and afterwards you say, well, on the occasions when you don't blow, if you haven't learned how to blow yet, what are you telling about when you don't blow? So why does it say Zichron Trua? There are two beautiful answers to this, and I'll tell you them briefly because it's worth knowing. The first answer is that the Pasuk in Emor says Shabboson. Now it's true that Shabboson means Yom Tov, but nonetheless, it's more appropriate to have the Zichron Trua on the Shabboson. It's another remez. So the Pasuk says, Yerlechem Shabboson Zichron Trua. When it's Shabbos, you'll only have a Zichron of the Trua. Whereas in Pinchas, it didn't say Shabboson in Pinchas at all, it's just talking about the Karbonos, therefore it tells us the din. Okay, that's possible. But Anita Teretz comes from the Torah Tumim, who suggests the following. He says, do you remember that year that Shabbos HaGodl was actually on, the 10th was actually on a Shabbos, and Pesach was on a Thursday? If Pesach was on a Thursday, we know from the rules that we have Tov is the first day of Tisha B'Av, Shin is Shavuos is the second day of Pesach, Reish is Rosh Hashanah, which is the third day of Pesach, which is a Shabbos. So Rosh Hashanah actually fell on a Shabbos that first year, and the Torah was given. It fell on a Shabbos. And since it fell on Shabbos, the Torah has to tell us immediately, I've given you the mitzvah of blowing the shofar, but it won't happen this year. Because this year it will be a Shabbos, therefore it's only a Zichron Trua. Are you going to ask me, no, what's the kasha on that? The Mekadosh al Piori, so they didn't have a calendar. So who says it was going to be on a Shabbos? And that was a beautiful answer. The famous Rabbeinu Chananel who says that in the wilderness, because they had the Anania covered, they couldn't see the moon the whole time. Since they couldn't see the moon, how could they keep the Chadoshim? So he says that they already had a calendar at Har Sinai for the first 40 years. They were Mekadosh through the calendar like we've got. So this calendar, which was Rav Hillel, thousands of years later, was Mekadosh, was already in function in the Midbar. So since it followed the calendar in the Midbar, there must have been Rosh Hashanah, must have been on a Shabbos. Therefore, Zichron Trua is mentioned in Emor first. Okay. That's by the way. So we do know that there is an inyan of zikr and tshuva and an inyan of tshuva. And as I said to you, the zikr, according to Rishonim, means remembering the tshuva, and therefore on Shabbos you can only remember it. However, the Bavli's maskana, zikr and tshuva, means something different. It's a date which the tshuva reminds us of. Now, if you look in the old Routledge Machzeirim, when I was a little boy, we didn't have all the modern art scrolls, and you didn't have any English. I wanted an English translation. So there was the old Routledge, and one of the most beautiful features of the Routledge was that it had the 10 reasons for the shofar of Rabbeinu Sadia Gaon. So I remember as a little boy seeing that, and you know, but the Gisad Yankasa, it stays in my mind. Rabbeinu Sadia gives 10 occasions when the shofar was blown. It was blown at Bias Olam, it was blown at Matan Torah, it will be blown at the time of Mashiach, and there's 10 occasions, and we blow in order to crown the king. But, okay, we know we have to blow, we've said that before, we had Vatim, but where do we know it's a shofar from? Well, the answer is from the Gzeirah Shofar from Yovel. Why Dafka a shofar? Now, if you look at the word shofar, I look at the concordance, it occurs 5 times in Chumash, of which 2 are in this in the case of the oval, and 3 are representing the shofar shal yanenu bakol, the Moshe Rabbeinu, at the time of the Matan Torah. The rest of Tanakh, it occurs 65 times, which is actually a very, very significant number if you think about it, because that's the Shema Adnus. The Shema Alevava Kodesh Baruch is Shema Adnus. So that 65 times is obviously significant. But, so the shofar is a word which occurs very, very, very prominently throughout Tanakh, but still, why do we need the shofar, and where we know the shofar from Bahar, that's imported from the Yovel. What's so special about the shofar? Well, I found the following Ramazim, and this is what I've said to you so far is in all the Sforim, not difficult to find. But if you look at number 7 on the list, I've given you several Ramazim to the shofar. First, the thing which perhaps start from before we come to the Ramazim, let's look at the shofar itself. The shofar itself is a bent instrument, which is meant to be meramis to us that we should have humility in Achno, and we should be bent. We shouldn't be straight and consider ourselves proud. We've got to have the shape of a shofar, which is called a kofuf. The Gemara Rosh Hashanah talks about how you've got to take from an animal, which is, that's how we know it comes from a ram, not from another type of animal, because it can't have a keren, for example, of a cow, which is straight. It's got to be a shofar which comes from the ayah. Secondly, there's a beautiful remez from the, I think it's from the Kotzk, who says the shofar has a very thin point to blow into, but has a very wide exit. And we should take the message from the shofar that if you will pischu li Pesach shel machat, ani eftach lecho shel Pesach shel ulam. You do your little bit. You can't do everything. Just do what you can, and the Kodesh Baruch Hu will do the rest. The shofar just put some effort into doing a tshuva at the beginning and the end. At the end, you'll have a very wide exit. That's what he says. Now, the Ramazim are interesting. First of all, the word shofar comes from the word shapir, to make beautiful, to improve. And we say, all those who sing Koribon, no, shapir kodomoch lachavaya. I don't know how many people are called Shapiro here, but the name Shapiro comes from this word shapir, which means beautiful and elevated, and we and to improve. That's how Shifra. Why was Shifra the Uziyo Chevid? Why was she called Shifra? She mishaperes yisavlad. She improved the bone structure of the baby. She improved the spirituality of the children. That was her job, to be mishaperes, to make things good and to put things right. So the shofar has in it the name Shapru Ma'aseichem. Make yourselves better, do better. That's one. Secondly, this I heard from Rabbi Oshansky. It's a little nice little remez. He says the following: the shofar is gematria 586, right? Now, he says if you take the word lave and the word pear and write it out in full, lave is a lamed, right? And a bez is a barakah, it's like bez yud tof. And take the pay, which is a pay hay, and a hay, which is a hay yud. If you add that up, it comes to 586. He suggests that the word shofar has within it the gematria of lave and pear, because there's two things you've got to put into the shofar. You've got to put in your wholehearted concentration, you have to have the kavona, kavona salave, but you've also got to have the pear, you've got to blow, you've got to use your mouth for tefillah, and you've got to use your head for the kavona. A tefillah has to have with kavona, and that's what the shofar is meramez. The thought of my own is this: every word has a two-letter basic root and a little bit added on. If you take the word shofar, the basic root is shin pei. What's shin pei mean? Let's look at the words. I've written out some words. A shifcha, a mishpacha, a shofet, shefichas dam, shofel, shefa, all these words have one thing in common. They mean to bring somebody down and subordinate. A shivcha is somebody who's subordinated to her master. The mishpacha is subordinated to the Rosh HaMishpacha. It's all part of that clan. They're all within that group.
You mean the root of the word?
The root of the word. Shafach means to pour something down, to downgrade the thing. Shofar means something in a low place. So it's natural to say that the word shapir, yes, you elevate yourself, but you don't elevate yourself by sticking your nose in the air and being a Baal Gaiva. You elevate yourself by reducing yourself, by downgrading yourself. That's what the shofar is telling us, this broken shofar, this with a little hole, etc. All that is telling us that we should know how to behave and represent ourselves correctly, and that will elevate us. But in fact, the root of the word means the exact opposite. That's anova, means to downgrade and subordinate. It's also connected actually with the shin bays root. The shin bays root, because a p is a stronger form of a b. It's well known, the Rabbi Shim Shafersh goes into this a bit, where boro means to create, and the pay raise root means to break out, like a bull or a prairus. So b is a little creation, a per is a stronger one. So now if you take the shof of shofar as being, what I would say, subordinating, the shof, the bays, is a lesser degree of doing so. And lefianistati, the rishon bays always means to confine. Like, given the examples here, yoshav, you sit in one place, you dwell in one place. Sova means also, that's a sin rather than a shin, but the word sheva, all that means is satisfaction and being happy where you are. Shuvo vanachas, being pleasant. Shovo, to capture somebody else, is confining them. What's that got to do with us? That's got to do with tshuva. I know we're talking about the shofar, but it's the same point. The shin bays root teaches us how to do teshuvah. Let's get back to where we came in the first place. There's a lot. The reason is there's a whole maral about how the shin is the second last letter of the aleph base, and the base is the second letter of the aleph base. And our job is that during the year we've strayed from the aleph. We went off the rails a little bit at the base, but then we went further and further and further and further, and then we went to the shin. And he says that if we go to the final degree to the top, we're finished. So therefore, he says when you reach the shin, you've got to do cheshbon and nefesh before you fall off the end, and you've got to go right back to the beginning. Well, you can't get right back to the beginning. That's impossible to reach the Yipud Hashem, especially if you've been a Bali Aveira. But at least get back to the base as close to the beginning as possible. That's what shov means. So shov is teshuva, going back to where we should be coming from. And therefore, the shov is teshuva, and the shapeir of the shofar is a progression from the teshuva to subordinate our wishes to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's all Derech Remez, but it's good grammar. Now, let's just go on very, very quickly. We say, Tikku b'chodesh shofar b'kesel yom chageinu ki chok yisrael hu mishpat l'elekei Yaakov. Now, what is it? Is it a chok or a mishpat? Well, we know that the shofar is both a chok and a mishpat. We know it's a chok because we do blow the shofar because HaKadosh Baruch Hu commanded us to do so. That is the Ikka Kavona, just as HaKadosh Baruch Hu told us to do. That's why we do it. We don't ask questions. However, if we take that as a starting point, it is permissible to see what lessons we can learn from it. And you all know the famous Rambam, the purpose of the shofar is remez yeshbo. What's that? Uru yeshenim mishinaschem nirdomim mitardem aschem. I'm not talking to you, don't worry, you're awake at the moment. But those of us who are not awake have to wake the spirit up. Uru yeshenim mishinaschem nirdomim mitardem aschem. If you look at the in the chinuch mitzvah Toch Hey, he also says the same idea is to awaken us and get us going in the right direction. This is what the shofar is all about. All the remazim of the shofar lead to that message. The main message that Kosh Baruch told to do is which is the chok. The mishpat part of it is the fact that we are entitled to learn remazim etc. There are other explanations of the two, of the chok and the mishpat. But that's a beautiful explanation to tell us. It's chok l'Yisrael. A yid who really understands knows he doesn't understand. Because a Yisrael is the highest madrega. He knows that I'm going to do this because Kosh Baruch Hu said so. But l'Elokeyanka, the lower yidin, who need a little bit of assistance in their learning, they will say, it's a mishpat l'Elokei Yaakov. Now, I don't want to run over time because it's late. Just I'm going to go back to the original question and just finish off with the there was one interesting story about the kavonis of the shofar. I did want to mention, which is important, which it gives you the point I just mentioned just now. Once upon a time, the Baal Shem Tov decided he wanted a Baal Tzokeah who was really good. Not only in the blowing, but also in the kavons. He said to the name of the gentleman who he asked to deal with it is a person called, I've forgotten the name, I've written it down here somewhere. Can you remember where it is? Rav Olfkitzis, you know the story. Do you know the story? Just read it from him. Rav Olfkitzis, thank you. That was the thank you very much, Yankee. Rav Olfkitzis. What happened was this: he learnt all the kavanas, he did all the things he was supposed to do, and he was getting himself there. And because he was worried that they episode at Tzibura, he made a daf. He wrote it all down. Like I did, probably more clearly than to be able to read it easier. And he put it in his machzor. It came to Rosh Hashanah to blow the shofar. He opened the everything was ready, and he was ready to blow the shofar, and he opened the machzor. And guess what? The daf wasn't there. He was distraught because it always relying upon what was written, and what should he do? But the people were waiting. He has to make the bracha. And the master, no, you can get on with it. So he had to make the bracha. He started doing, and all the kavanos went completely out of his mind, and he almost cried with absolute concern. The Baal Shem Tov wanted all these wonderful kavanos, and all he could do was with a broken heart that he couldn't do anymore. So that afterwards, the Baal Shem Tov came to him and he said, Rebbe, I'm so sorry. What happened to my dad? Baal Shem Tov said, no, that was the most beautiful tekiyas I've ever heard. What do you mean? He said, you have absolutely the best kavana you could possibly have. So what do you mean? He said, you have the kavana that you went with a broken heart, with a lev nishbar. That's the way you have to be. You don't be so proud of yourself. You know all the kavana. That's what you've got to do. He said, well, why should it be like this? It's very simple. Each one of the kavanas is a mafteach, which opens another room. Each room is a room with gold in it, a room with silver in it. It's a mafteach which will open each individual room. However, there is something stronger than a mafteach which will break every door, and that's an axe. A chopping axe, you don't need the key for the particular room if you've got a chopping axe. You chop the whole, any wall will come down. You had the chopping axe because you broke yourself, therefore you had the right kavanos. I just want to answer the original question and it will stop. The longest possible Shemoneh Esrei, anybody work it out yet? No, much longer than that. Rosh Hashanah Shachris.
No, he's besides
Rosh Hashanah Musaf. There's a long, let me tell you what it is. It's Yom Kippur Yovel Shechalios B'Shabbos. You cannot find a longer Shemoneh Esrei than that. Yom Kippur Yovel Shechalios B'Shabbos, you have to have the whole of the Yom Kippur davening for Musaf, and Yom Kippur Musaf Shechalios B'Shabbos comes, you have to have with it the whole of the Rosh Hashanah davening as well, because on Yovel, we learned just now that on the Yovel you do blow the shofar, and there's Mishnah Mefureshes in Rosh Hashanah, which says, it's Shofar the Rosh Hashanah Gam Lebrochas, not only to the Kiyas, so you have to say the whole of the Malchus, the whole of Zichron, the whole of the Yom Kippur davening, the whole whole lot, and it's also Shabbos. That's the longest Shemoneh you can possibly have. Now, what's the relevance to us? The relevance is very simple, that Yom Kippur Yovel has with it Malchus. What's the special? The answer is that Yom Kippur Yovel, you have 2 years Shemitah, which is unbelievable bitachon. You, 1 year is bad enough for the farmer, for 2 whole years. That shows complete dependence on Hashem. That's what the Yom Kippur is trying to teach us. And that's what we've got to import into the Shofar on Rosh Hashanah, that we should have that bitachon in Hashem completely. And the Shofar tells us that we should have complete dependence on the Malchus of Hashem on Rosh Hashanah, and then in Rosh Hashem, we'll be Zeichet, have a Yovel, and we'll have a Shana Tovah Masechta. Yeah.